Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The race is on, and it's all happening in the F1 driver market with George Russell standing in for Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes, Jack Aitken standing in for Russell at Williams, and Haas also announcing its 2021 driver lineup of Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin. I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to discuss these moves is Mark Hughes. Well, Mark, hello. Presumably you'll still hold up in your Bahrain hotel, so any expectations of a quiet end to the season with the titles done and dusted? It's just been utterly shattered, hasn't it, with what's been going on the past few days?
Yeah, this is the busiest time of the year, as it's turned out. Not only, you know, are we working on all the end of season stuff and the season review stuff, but it's suddenly just gone manic in the driver market as well. Partly thanks to Lewis's positive COVID test, but an awful lot happening. So partly as a result of we've also had the replacement of temporary replacement of Romain Grosjean for this weekend at Haas. So yeah, all in all, an awful lot happening in a very compressed few days in between two races.
Which is a good excuse for some extra podcasts. We've already done one on Pietro Fittipaldi. You can find that in our feed as the last episode that came out on Monday at some point. So we're going to look at the subsequent driver moves. So let's start off with where we have to start off. George Russell in the fastest car in Formula One. Currently it's a one-weekend appointment, although obviously he could get the second outing in Abu Dhabi. This is really significant, isn't it? What he gets the chance to show what he can do.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looked every step of the way in his career. He's done absolutely everything that could be expected of him. He's always delivered, and it was a sort of constant frustration for the rest of us watching him having to compete at the back of the field, or sort of worse than the back of the field last year, just sort of hanging off the back of the field. At least this year he's been able to race and with some of the other teams back there, he's easily got enough experience in those Formula One experience in those data banks now to translate his obvious potential, but until we see him in an absolutely top car, it's difficult to gauge exactly what the potential is. Is it high or is it super high? You know, is he a good Grand Prix driver or is he an amazing Grand Prix driver? So we're going to get the first clues to that this weekend, I would say, yes.
Yeah, well, we know he's very quick. He's been in Q2 nine times this season. He's also a fine race driver. He's got a little bit of an unfair reputation as someone who throws it away, but he's hardly had any shots at points. Yes, the crash under the safety car at Imola was dreadful, but it's one of those things that happens. You can kind of get away with it once, just have to learn from it. Mugello, he could have scored points, but wheel spin at the final restart. Now, this Williams is not an easy car to get off the line. Both drivers have said that, and Williams themselves have said he hit all the targets properly. And yeah, okay, he could have got the point that Kubica got last year in Germany, but he had that moment sliding off the track briefly in the rain. But this is not a regular point scoring car, so you can't say that's a big enough sample set to say he's some kind of choker as a driver. And I think this is going to be a brilliant chance for him to show how good he is at absorbing a pressure situation, because this is going to be really difficult jumping into an unfamiliar car to try and show how good you are.
Yeah, and if he's the type of character I think he is, and what's been suggested by his career to date, that pressure is actually going to be a positive force. That's actually having the spotlight upon him. I think he's the type of guy who will deliver under the spotlight. I think he's going to be very comfortable there. That's just my gut instinct. The other thing in his favour, of course, is that he is very familiar with the whole team and the car, albeit from the simulator. But he has a great relationship with all the key people in that team, you know, right through all the levels of engineering. Spends a lot of time there, has spent a lot of time there in the last few years, even during Grand Prix weekends when he wasn't before Williams times. You know, this is a guy that got into, when he first tested a Mercedes, he set the fastest ever Formula One lap around the Hungara Ring at his first go. We don't know exact comparisons of the state of the track. Was it a good day or whatever? But we know he's somewhere there or thereabouts. And the other thing in his favour, of course, is that this track is essentially new to everyone. So he's not he's not going into a weekend in a situation where his teammate understands better the requirements of the car at this particular circuit, because it's new to everyone.
I guess that's the key question, isn't it? In this situation, how exactly do we measure success? I'd completely endorse what you said about the kind of character Russell is. He's also got a very calm, methodical, intelligent approach. But what exactly does he need to do? Obviously, the dream thing is you go in, you outpace Bottas, you win the race, which is, you know, it's possible, but it's pretty unlikely, isn't it? So what would be a successful weekend for George Russell?
A successful weekend would be to get within, I guess, less than 0.2 of Valtteri, and to be on the podium. That would be a sort of baseline of success, and I think anything beyond that would be somewhere between excellent and sensational.
It's very possible, because if he gets within that, if he gets anywhere near that within 0.2 of Bottas, he should be second on the grid, and he should be potentially able to finish second in the race if he can get a good start and then do what he needs to do in the race. That's still asking quite a lot, but it is possible. It's very difficult to get a feel for how big the Mercedes advantage will be this weekend, given it is that strange circuit. But if you look at, say, Monza, Mercedes had a 1% advantage over the second fastest car there. If it's that sort of scale, then being second is very, very much possible for Russell. But I think this has to be seen by Russell, and Bottas will know this too, that this is a really important weekend for both of them in terms of the future for 2022, isn't it? Because Mercedes will downplay it. Yes, it's a stand-in drive, but it has the elements of a pseudo shootout, doesn't it? Because you're being measured against your direct, obvious rival for a seat in 2022. It's inescapable.
Yeah, obviously, Valtteri, you know, has this series of one-year contracts, and he has the seat for next year, but nothing's guaranteed beyond that. And if we assume Lewis is going to continue and, you know, for another two or three seasons at least, which is what he's intimated, then yeah, absolutely, he's got to be gunning for that seat, and it's very, very explicit what this comparison is about. And They tested together at the Abu Dhabi last year, Valtteri and George, that is, and were very closely matched there. So yeah, it's all it is sort of set up really under the most explicit circumstances possible for what's at stake in 22. So the other thing, just going back to your point about the Mercedes advantage around this sort of track, it's such a short lap that one error could put you back a lot. It's not because you're going to have so little time left in the lap to recover any error. So that's going to be an important part of everyone's weekend coming up, I would say, and so that's got to go into the mix as well.
Yeah, I think overall it's positive for Russell that it's this circuit. I think that the most important thing is the fact that it's basically only four corner complexes, you could say. Two of them are the familiar ones, the first three turns and then the last, technically two corners, but really the last single corner of the Grand Prix circuit. And then you've got the two, the sort of turn four, the right, that starts the same as the normal track and then turns you left onto that top section of the track. And then the run through turn, I forget what the turn numbers are, but it's a left-right medium speed chicane. So the really positive thing, I think, for Russell is that's not that many corners to get on top of in terms of mastering all the little tools and tricks, because this is the really difficult thing. All those diff maps and brake shapes and the engine braking setups, all these things that can have a small but significant impact on the dynamics of the car. He's not got a really, really complicated track, so he's got a few key areas to focus on, and I think that will help him. But for me, the really perilous situation is going to be Q1, isn't it? Because not because he's not going to be fast enough, but 20 cars out on track at that circuit is a car every 177 metres, I think it is. Were they all there at the same time? There's potential for incidents. The tow's going to be significant. So that's your kind of perilous moment. That's going to be the highest stress part of the weekend. That 20 minutes should get through, but you just never know what's going to happen. It could be chaos in that period.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess everybody's going to be trying to work out a clever strategy on when to hit the track to try and get some clear space. But it's game theory, isn't it? Because everybody's going to be trying to do the same thing. So it's probably going to end up just being random chance that how compromised your lap is. But yeah, fingers crossed you can get through that first hurdle, because it's very easy for anyone to trip up there, you know. Could just as easily be Valtteri, who trips up there. I don't think it's going to come down to experience that bit. It's going to come down to luck. So, yeah, once he gets past that first hurdle, I think we then see a more representative form, hopefully, to what that comparison looks like.
That's all Valtteri Bottas needs, isn't it? A situation like that where it's all down to luck, given that he's had none of that recently. He's had plenty of bad luck, but you know, he just likes some neutral luck for once. So it is going to be interesting, and I'm interested to see what impact it has on Bottas. As you mentioned earlier, it's been always these 1-year contracts. Even when they've announced a multi-year deal, it's always a multi-year deal that will keep him at the team for at least one more season. So it's always one more. And he's admitted that's made it a bit tricky for him at times. So Bottas knows what's at stake here as well. And he basically has to win from pole position, doesn't he? And he can't necessarily strengthen his case, but he could weaken it a little bit, because this is his shot to lead the team with no Hamilton there. And it might be the only shot he gets to prove that before whatever point when Hamilton retires down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got to beat Verstappen. As well as George. So, you know, a couple of times this year he hasn't done that. And I don't mean things where his tyres exploded and things like that, things outside of his control. But I mean, where he's had a straight race and been beaten by Max, that's happened twice this year. So it could always happen again, this time for the win rather than second place. So, yeah, big pressure there. And also, I mean, the reality has got nothing to do with it, but the perception is going to be, it's going to affect the perception of just how big a part Lewis played in this domination this year. Because if Valtteri just takes over as the dominant winner, or even if George somehow wins, there's going to be you'd be able to advance the theory that, well, you can put anyone in that car and it will win. On the other hand, if it doesn't work out like that, then again, it would reflect better on Lewis. But you know, the reality is it's way more complicated than that. We've discussed before how much intrinsic Lewis' contribution is to that, and how multifaceted it is. But for the general casual fan looking on, I think the conclusions will be made based upon how Valtteri and George get on this weekend.
I think it's important to note that at the weekend we've just had, Verstappen could well have beaten Bottas. He was ahead on first runs in Q3, and that final lap Verstappen put together gave away a bit of time in the first sector, a little bit off the last corner. He could have been ahead of Bottas, and then of course you've got the challenge at the start, which is going to be quite interesting, because Bottas has had a couple of difficult starts. He's worked a lot on starts, and sometimes it's been good, sometimes it's been not so good. George Russell also has had his problems with starts. I think that's something that's more intrinsic to the Williams. It's a very narrow window to get everything right in terms of your clutch deployment, your throttle, etc. Latifi's had problems with that as well. So you're going to have these defining points of the weekend. Qualifying will play a big part in defining what kind of race they have, but then those early seconds of the race are going to be so important. Doubly so if those two Mercedes drivers are near each other, because knowing George Russell, he's a competitive guy. If he has the chance to safely and reasonably pass Bottas in that, if he's behind, he'll try. But he could also find himself dealing with McLarens or Red Bulls and that kind of thing. He could lead the first lap. He could be eighth on the first lap. That's gonna define the kind of race he's going to face, isn't it?
Yes. I think he's level-headed enough. He's not going to do anything marginal. He's not going to go for a 50-50 move on anyone, least of all Valtteri. But yes, absolutely. If there's a clear opportunity there, he'll go for it. He'll do it. And if he feels he's quicker, I'm sure he'll, you know, I can imagine a situation in which if he feels he is quicker in the race but is behind, I can imagine a situation very similar to that of Charles Leclerc at Bahrain last year saying, guys, what we're doing here? I'm quicker, and just making it, you know, very obvious what you know where he's at. You know, I'm sort of extrapolating to a ridiculous extent here before he's even got into the car. But I'm just talking about his mindset and his competitive nature, regardless of where it turns out, how he actually compares to Valtteri in the race and in qualifying.
Yeah, and we have to recognise that Russell does have the potential to be, as you said, it's whether he's this outstanding driver or just a very good one, shall we say. Bottas is a very, very good driver. He's just not quite as good as Lewis Hamilton. But Russell, yeah, there's a touch of magic. What he's been doing recently has a little bit of echoes of, say, Alonso at Minardi kind of thing. You never can be completely sure whether that level translates into a top car and what the Fulham level is, especially when you're against slightly weaker teammates. But he's the kind of driver who gets this sort of opportunity and seizes it, isn't it? That's his personality. The key is, I guess, that he doesn't overreach, shall we say. He needs to make sure he does his best, does what's possible, but doesn't just try that little bit too hard and then undermine his own cause for a seat down the line.
Yeah, I think he's so level-headed that he will probably resist the temptation to do anything rash. But I think his performance will be gauged more on pace comparison, tyre usage, you know, the underlying things that are behind the result rather than the result itself. So If he finishes second behind Valtteri, but has shown that he had pace in hand and that his tyres were in better condition when they came off, and finds things on the car that finds a better direction to go with setup, things like that, they will be the things that probably could swing it in his favour and would probably be more significant than the actual result, which is the big headline that the outside world is looking at. But within the team, it'll be a deeper analysis than that.
Any sympathy for Mercedes reserve driver Stoffel Vandoorne, who will be heading out to Bahrain but will not be racing?
Yeah, of course, on a human level, of course, because, you know, here was a possible chance to reignite your Formula One career in the most spectacular way possible. And dangled before him, and then it was looking at, well, maybe it won't be the Mercedes drive, maybe it'll be the Williams drive as they get George, and then it turns out it's not even that. So he's just in his normal role as the reserve driver.
Yeah, I'd have liked to have seen Vandoorne have a bit of a shot at redeeming himself. He's a better driver than what he was able to show, and it's one of those situations where actually all the obvious candidates, because it was Russell, Vandoorne and Nico Hülkenberg, super sub, were the three contenders, and they're all fascinating ones to see in that car. It would have been great for any of them, really, to have a go. But yeah, a little bit of sympathy for Vandoorne there. How about the man who replaces George Russell at Williams, Jack Aitken? Now, that might come as a bit of a surprise to people. He had a mediocre F2 season this year, finishing 12th, but He did finish fifth last year. He's a race winner in F2, championship winner in Formula Renault 2 liter. You know, a good driver. Yeah, he's had an outing in the car and free practice that was in Styria, so the Red Bull ring, earlier this year. Interesting choice. Not a future superstar, but a decent little driver, Jack Aitken, isn't he?
Yeah, Jack's no mug. He's at a pretty good level and a very bright guy, sort of driver that you see quite often that starts out looking okay but gets progressively more impressive if given the chance. His career is actually quite closely intertwined with George's, actually. They were teammates in both GP3 and in his first year at ART. He finished runner-up to George in GB3 2017, and albeit a long way behind George. But yeah, a good driver, and definitely deserves a shot at Formula One. And yeah, up to him to maximise this opportunity out of the blue.
Yeah, I think he's got a good approach. And it's always interesting to see drivers thrown in this situation. It's not necessarily a promising situation for him, but it's one where he can do himself a lot of good, because obviously Nick Latifi, qualifying's not been great for him this year. He's been well off George Russell. Race performances have been better, but he knows the team. He's got a little bit of familiarity with the car, plenty of simulator work. So it's that kind of situation where a driver who no one's really thinking about as an F1 candidate can jump in and enhance their reputation.
A lot of it's down to circumstance and luck in how the weekend unfolds. But if he gets a clear run at it, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be targeting out qualifying Latifi and finishing ahead of him in the race. That's got to be a realistic target for him, and if he's to retain, you know, the credibility that he's worthy of another chance in the future.
Yeah, it's one of those things where his single-seater career seemed to be winding down a little bit after that difficult season in F2. But you can reignite. I mean, Kamui Kobayashi is the example I always use. He was going nowhere, got into a Toyota, suddenly he's got an F1 career. So that's sort of the thing that Aitken will be hoping for. I'm not saying Aitken's Kobayashi, but it's just an example of what's possible. Let's have a look at Haas. Two drivers confirmed there. We have to start with Mick Schumacher, who was the second of the two confirmed. Won't dwell on him for too long, because we did do that earlier episode on this podcast looking in depth at Mick Schumacher. That was at a point where it looked like he might end up at Alfa Romeo rather than Haas, but there's an in-depth conversation there you can look back and listen to. But how excited are you about seeing him in F1?
I'm intrigued more than excited. I mean, it's an exciting addition to the grid, having the Schumacher name, just because of the weight that it carries. Putting that aside, just putting all the perception of that name and what it carries, just as a driver, just looking at him as a driver, I'm quite intrigued by him, because he does do unexpected things like that second season of Formula 3, the second half of that second season of F3 was astounding. He just suddenly stepped it up such a level. He's more or less unbeatable, having looked, you know, okay up until that point. And similarly, his first season of F2, he looked okay, but, you know, looked a little bit underprepared, to be honest. And then this year, he's leading the championship on merit. He's not blindingly fast. He hasn't shown he's blindingly fast in F2. He's, but he's been quick and competitive, and he delivers on race day. So I think he's very intelligent. He's quick enough to be a credible Formula One driver. How much he can develop that foundation will probably be down to how intelligently he applies himself, and I've got no doubts that he will be applying himself very well. So there's no real pressure on him. That the Haas isn't going to be a great car. It's basically this year's car. He has a rookie teammate. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a long-term interesting project, and I can see him here for a time to come yet. It's just, you know, we're discussing whether George Russell is a good Grand Prix driver or a great Grand Prix driver. We're looking on the eve of Mick Schumacher and questioning is he a worthy F1 driver, or is he a good F1 driver? So that's where we're at, and I'm intrigued to find out, because I think there's something there. I think there's definitely some potential there.
Yeah, I've been impressed by that progress he's been able to make during seasons. I think, yes, you want to see someone drop in and be stellar straight away, but these drivers who keep working away always impress me. He's clearly got a little bit of the old Schumacher approach in that one. So, yeah, interesting to see how he does. And great drive on Saturday in the Bahrain feature race. 10th on the grid, title rival Callum Ilott on pole, looking down the barrel of a potential big point swing against him. But great first lap, good race, minimise the losses. That's a really encouraging sign. How about the other driver, Nikita Mazepin? Now, he's not so highly regarded. 21-year-old, basically it's family money that's got him there. But he's third in F2, he's won feature races, had a run at the GP3 Championship in 2018, finishing second to the late Antoine Hubert. So he's another driver who is perhaps a little bit better than people are maybe giving him credit for.
Yeah, you got to give him his due, regardless of how he was able to where how his funding eased his passage, let's say. But you know, you still got to deliver, and he's had a very competitive Formula 2 season, and a more competitive season than anyone would probably have expected, given his previous seasons in F2. So I think. Yeah, he's a credible driver at that level of the grid. And again, another intelligent guy, quite an intelligent guy. But we just know from listening to him explain things, he's quite clear in his thought processes. So, I think it's it'll be interesting to see how the two of them compare. And that's probably going to be all we're going to have to gauge their progress on, their comparison to each other in this first year. But he's certainly a credible addition to the grid. I don't think there is a stigma of being the billionaire's son like we have with Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi, but it doesn't really matter. If you can produce it, you're worthy of a place there. And so yeah, let's see. I see no reason why he won't be able to do that.
Yeah, and his CV is worthy of it. The thing that I do quite like about Mazepin is I remember a few years ago when he was first doing that development program with Force India, I was asked to do an interview with him for F1 Racing. So I sat down with him for a bit of time and spoke to him. And you can tell, you know, sometimes when you speak to drivers, you can tell there's a sort of underlying intelligence and the right sort of approach. So that's always been in evidence. So I think that's quite encouraging for him, because it's going to be a tough season, as you say, for them next year. But maybe he can make something of it, and it'd be interesting to see how they both get on. Any sympathy for Callum Ilott? That's the second sympathy question for the podcast. Is he joining Stoffel Vandoorne in sympathy corner?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love to have seen how he got on in the Haas at the Nürburgring that was fogged off, and whether he could have, you know, created an opportunity for himself in there, because there are flashes of inspirational stuff from him sometimes. He's a bit up and down, but yeah, he intrigues me, because his best stuff is superb. And that's the sort of driver that sometimes can take an F1 opportunity by the scruff of the neck and just sort of, you know, step up a whole gear. Not saying that he definitely would, but he has that sort of, how do you, mercurial form about him. And I would be very, very intrigued to see him get a proper crack at it. But yeah, it's not to be so far anyway.
Yeah, but as we can see, you never know when an opportunity might present itself. We see that this weekend with Pietro Fittipaldi also being in. So two drivers making their F1 debut, three drivers making their debut for teams. So that's going to make it a really interesting weekend, plus the fun of this very, very interesting Bahrain outer circuit. It's going to be a great weekend. I'd urge everyone to follow this one closely. If you thought this season was petering out, this is going to make it into a great story. Thanks very much, Mark Hughes, for your insight. Do follow therace.com, and don't forget the hyphen, loads of coverage of all these driver changes there, in-depth pieces on the various contenders if you want to have a look at their prospects for the future. Check out our YouTube channel. There's a video there where we discuss Mick Schumacher's prospects, and also check out our sister podcasts, including the Gary Anderson F1 show. He has a very in-depth look at Roman Grosjean's crash in the latest edition. So join us, unless there's some more driver announcements that necessitate another extra podcast, on Sunday after the race for our in-depth review.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.